It was very cold the year I broke a ligament in my right leg and fell in love with soft-eyed, brown-haired angel on earth, Emma Haynes, and got a job as a messenger boy after school. It was also the year I sent away to New York for a free booklet on how to get the most out of anything and everything, anybody and everybody. It was the coldest year in the history of the San Joaquin Valley since 1854. The paper said it was, in cold print. It was cold enough to make me hate to get up in the morning, even after the booklet I'd sent for came from New York and said I should do the things I didn't feel like doing. The fundamental thing I didn't feel like doing was getting out of bed in the morning. I just didn't feel in the mood to get up and shiver in the cold. The booklet from New York was severe, though. A picture of a man pointed a menacing finger at you and asked, "Are you drifting downstream? Only fools follow the line of least resistance. Wise men struggle against the forces of the world and finally reach goals of glory, fame, and wealth." Even so, I thought, what sort of glory could a man struggle for, and what would he be famous as? Then I bust the ligament in my right leg playing football. It was the cold. If it hadn't been so cold when I'd punted, I'd have gotten the ball away very nicely. But instead, all I did was snap a ligament and fall down with unholy pain and order my teammates to tackle the man carrying the ball. "Tackle him! I'm dying! Don't let him make a touchdown!" I yelled. No general ever sank to defeat with greater dignity and irritation. I didn't want to be a hero, and I didn't want to die, because I hadn't seen enough of the world, and I hadn't talked to Emma Haynes, the most beautiful girl in the world. Johnny Cooper came over and looked disgusted at me. "I guess I can't play anymore," I said. "Why not?" Johnny said. "My leg's lost its equilibrium." "What the heck are you talking about?" "I can't stand," I said, "and my leg hurts." "Well, you don't need to stand to be quarterback. You can call signals from a crouching position, can't you? Your mouth ain't paralyzed, is it?" "I can't get up. Something's fundamentally wrong with my leg."
"That's your imagination," Johnny said. "Look, we gotta win this game. You can call signals from a crouching position easy."
"Oh, I can do it all right, but my mind won't be on my work. It's cold, and something's fundamentally wrong with my right leg. I can't budge, and I'm freezing."
Anyway, I called signals, and we won the game 187-177. I didn't stay for the gang fight after the game because signals weren't involved, and I was too frozen. I couldn't get up and walk, so I crawled a whole block and began whistling for my little brother, Raleigh. People in the street told me to get up and walk. They said it was a disgrace the way I was always up to some foolishness, imitating cripples and laughing at the misfortunes of the weak. I couldn't tell them I was really a cripple myself. I was cold and hurt, and they wouldn't believe me. But my brother, Raleigh, heard my special whistle for him, 3 long ones and 7 short ones, and came running. He was out of breath when he reached me.
"Why can't you get up and walk?" he said. "What you crawling for?"
"I can't get up," I said. "Something's fundamentally wrong with my right leg."
"Come on," he said. "Get up. I'll help you. Your left leg's all right. I'll help you walk."
Well, he helped me up and we started walking home. It took us half an hour to go 3 blocks, and I hopped all the way. I rubbed a lot of Sloan's liniment on my leg, and the liniment burned, and my leg got red. But next morning I still couldn't walk, so I didn't go to school. At 9 o'clock, the mailman brought me the booklet from the correspondence school in New York. I read it from cover to cover. There was a picture of a young man sitting alone in a little room reading a book, and another picture of another young man leaning against the wall of a pool room, having just spit into a spittoon. The young man who was reading the book was supposed to be the one to admire and imitate. But I didn't know. The other one seemed to be having a much better time. He just hit the bullseye and was watching a fellow make a tough shot.
"Which of these young men will be a success?" the booklet asked.
But it didn't say what kind of a success. I could just see the young man who was loafing around in pool rooms, learning everything he could about billiards and becoming world's champion billiard player. but I couldn't see the young man reading the book being anything but a dope. What he'd probably do, I figured, was study a long time and then get a job as a clerk somewhere and be a success. Well, that was his affair, and I decided not to take the correspondence course. What with my bad leg, I wasn't able to ride my bicycle again for a week. Little by little, my leg thawed out and limbered up, and little by little, I could lift it a little and put it down and sort of walk. I'd always wanted to get a job as a messenger and make some money, but I was always afraid to go in and ask for a job. I wasn't old enough for one thing, and for another I was scared. But when the ligament of my right leg busted and I could barely walk, let alone ride a bicycle, I went into the telegraph office and asked for a job, and got a job. The boss was a great big man named Gifford. When he saw me riding my bicycle in the street, he was pretty amazed. And afterwards, when I walked into the office, he said, "For heaven's sake, son, why didn't you tell me you were lame?" "Well, I ain't lame," I said. "Something's fundamentally wrong with my right leg. But I'm rubbing it with Sloan's liniment, and it'll be all right tomorrow for sure." He didn't fire me either, and I didn't quit, although it was still very cold. After a while, I got used to it. I got used to the dirt in my eyes, my hands freezing, and the dogs chasing me down dark streets, scaring me to death. I got used to the lameness, even. I even forgot the lameness. And after a while, the pain ended, and I was walking and riding my bicycle in fancy style. That is, when I was going around corners, I was doing it with elegance and daring. Also, when I was getting between moving traffic. I wouldn't get to bed till 1 a.m, and the alarm clock would ring at 7. That was only 6 hours sleep, and I needed 13. I wouldn't want to get out of bed. It was too cold. But I'd always get out of bed and have breakfast and jump onto my bicycle and race to school because I knew I'd see Emma Haynes. I'd be very sleepy all day. Emma Haynes would be nearby across the aisle, and I'd be very tired, and pretty soon I'd start to sleep with my eyes wide open, and our teacher, poor Mrs. Haggerty, she'd call my name and ask me a question, and I'd be dead to the world. I'd be dreaming about Emma Haynes, who was across the aisle all the time. One day I fell plumb asleep right in class, my head on my folded arms. Mrs. Haggerty woke me up. She was pretty sore, and I don't blame her in a way. She said, "Young man, this is not a hotel. This is a classroom." Well, it got so I didn't care about school at all. It got so I'd fall asleep 2 minutes after I sat down, just knowing Emma Haynes was nearby. One day when I woke up and was yawning, I noticed she was looking at me. After school, I saw her walking down the corridor with another girl whose father was rich. Emma Haynes's father was just about the richest man in town. I don't know why I had to fall in love with her, but I did. I guess maybe it was because she was so well-fed looking and smelled so good. I could smell her a block away, I guess. I went down the corridor, figuring I'd talk to Emma. I hadn't ever said anything to her. I caught up with her and the other rich girl, and they stopped, waiting for me to talk. But when I tried to open my mouth, I found out I'd suddenly got lockjaw. The two girls got very sore, especially Emma, and they went away in a huff, passing remarks about certain fellas at school, including me. Golly, I felt terrible. And Emma Haynes taking an attitude like that? That was the worst of it. I thought it would kill me if Emma Haynes didn't understand what sort of a guy I was, riding a bicycle all hours of the night through the dark streets, in the awful dark world with mad dogs chasing me, houses hidden, and everything cold. I'd just die if Emma Haynes didn't know me and give me some of the well-fed glow that she had. I felt I'd just go to sleep some night and never wake up again, if that was the attitude she wanted to take. I began to look at her more often at school, but her attitude went from bad to worse. She wouldn't even look at me. One day I put a little love letter on her desk. It said, "Emma, I love you, Dewey." Well, she handed the note to Mrs. Haggerty, and Mrs. Haggerty called me out and said, Young man, did you write this appalling message? Yes, ma'am, I said.
Go to the principal's office,
she said. So I went. Mr. Bowler, the principal, was practically a giant. He looked at me for a while, and then he said,
Is this true, boy? Did you write this note?
Yes, sir.
Don't you realize who Emma Haynes is?
Well, I know her father owns a lot of buildings and stores in town, a lot of farms in the country. I know he's rich.
And you wrote the note anyway?
Well, yes, sir.
It's one of the most touching love letters of our age, he said. I'll have to punish you just the same. For the rest of the day, you'll act as my orderly.
So I acted as Mr. Bowler's orderly for the rest of the day. He sent me 6 blocks to Pabst to get 2 hams on rye and 2 bottles of strawberry pop. He made me eat one of the sandwiches and drink one of the bottles of pop.
One thing, though, he said finally, I think I must accept the obligation to tell you, stop being in love with Emma Haynes.
Well, why?
It's no good. She's a rich man's daughter. You're a poor man's son. It won't work.
Maybe she loves me and don't know it.
Not a chance, said Mr. Bowler. Just forget her. You'll get into a heap of trouble. What made you write that brief love letter?
Well, I love her.
Well, he said, it is well written.
The winter was long, and the newspaper said it was the coldest winter since the year 1854. I didn't get over being in love with Emma Haynes until I don't know when. I saw her riding around in classy automobiles with boys whose fathers were rich, and I figured maybe I'd die of grief. It was like my lame leg, though. One day in the spring when the sun was shining and everything was warm in the world, I found out I was healed. I was riding my bicycle through town when all of a sudden I saw Emma Haynes sitting in a slick green Buick Roadster with a biggest sissy in the world, a boy called Everett Rhodes. It was a marvelous opportunity for me to put Emma Haynes in her place. Not loving a guy like me when I told her I'd loved her, going around like that with a sissy like Everett Rhodes. I caught up with them and made a very loud noise with my tongue and lips that people heard a block away. And then I rode on down the street, acrobatically, as it were. No, I guess I didn't need to take any lousy correspondence course on anything. My leg healed all right. And finally, the coldest winter since 1854 ended. And I got over Emma Haynes. I did some mighty ornamental riding on my bicycle after that, celebrating my great victories.